does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it all.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Good morning, sports fans from Indianapolis, Indiana, from the world's greatest race course.
This is a rite of passage. This is lore.
Start your engine.
Passed down from generation to generation. Even those stories you can't remember are moments you never forget.
Some of us lost it.
This is where heroes become legends, and legends become legendary.
Elio Castroneves joins the four-time Winners Club!
From Ray Haroon to Mario Andretti and Marcus Ericsson, this story takes a whole month to tell.
You just don't know what Indy means.
This is a special blend of speed, tradition, and magic. This is blood, sweat, tears, and maybe a few beers. But it's much more. So much more. This is world class and worldwide. Hoosier hospitality on a global stage. This is the Indy 500. But you've never seen this 500. This is May.
And we're inside 100 days to the Indianapolis 500, the 107th coming up Memorial Day weekend. Hello, welcome. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. And tonight, an appearance in downtown Indianapolis. Eddie Garrison is always here, our in-studio producer. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is alongside, at least as far as the airwaves are concerned, with us tonight. But Kurt, as you know, I like to check and make sure the key card works every once in a while. So I am here. We're ready to roll. And Peyton Manning has kicked us off. And I remember last year when David Letterman voiced a similar promotion, if you will. A lot of people didn't make the instant connection that that was Letterman. There's not many that don't recognize Peyton Manning's voice, so well done to those that organized that. He is not a Hoosier, but he is honorary, and it kind of gives you goosebumps a little bit to make you think we're getting a little bit closer and just reminds us of the significance of this event in our backyard every year.
Yeah, it was great. It was great, and I think the line in the promo that's so good is, you've never seen this 500. You know, we've all seen it. We all have known the experience. There are a lot of people who have just watched it on TV and understood all the things, or at least many of the things that go into this event. But you've never seen this 500. And I think that's the attraction, is that we know, we've been to so many of these. I've been to close to 40 of them. You're going to see something probably today, and I think this on Race Morning, you're going to see something today that you've never seen before. Something that'll wow you, something that may leave you breathless, something that may leave you with a memory of a lifetime, whether that's watching, you know, Marcus Ericsson and Pato O'Ward going into turn one, competing for that win, or what have you. But that's what I really liked about this particular promo. And I think the last couple with Letterman and Peyton Manning have just been outstanding, and they've been well read, meaning, you know, voiced. There's some good voicing in this as well,
and good writing, obviously, too, to allow them to convey the message that you'd like to have out there. And here in these parts, yes, we all get the Indy 500 is the one that resonates nationwide and even locally. That there are still, unfortunately, and this is kind of an ongoing battle to make sure Indianapolis understands that it's more than just the Indianapolis 500, that there is a season-long championship. So we spend more time highlighting the start of the season, and that's nearly upon us. And by the way, I have noticed, so some would often ask, well, wait a minute, why aren't you doing those kind of things for the season? I've not been home much, but I did watch the Today Show a couple of mornings, and I must have seen in the hour last week when I watched the Today Show, five different promos for St. Pete on NBC. So they're getting after it as well.
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't, you know, I think before I got into the understanding the marketing side of a company like Penske Entertainment, and before that, just the home of George family, I think you know, you have this idea of that it's every few minutes you're going to get hit with, you know, reminders, whether it's billboards or in the newspaper or on a television. And sometimes, you know, you just miss them. You know, you're listening to the radio and you get a phone call. And when you come back 3 minutes later, you've missed the 30-second spot. So I think there's a lot of it that goes on, and it's just about timing. And, you know, do you catch people at the right time when they're listening, when they're paying attention, when they're in their car? Are they turning on the evening news? Whatever. You know, if you don't have the Today Show on, as your example, you don't see those, and then you think maybe nothing's happened. So yeah. It is kind of a stab in the dark if you're on the purchasing side trying to find where people are. So it's a tough gig.
It's why marketing is so hard, and it's why I don't pay a lot of attention, you know, for example, in your old mailbag when I would see some write in, and I live in so and so where IndyCar is racing and I've seen nothing. Well, you're probably not consuming every bit of media that is being amassed. That doesn't mean just because you didn't see it doesn't mean that they didn't market. It's impossible to reach everyone unless you want to spend a gazillion dollars on marketing. So along with the Peyton commercial that's been airing, I'm going to guess, and you may know, that these are mostly in the top Indy 500 markets. Those aren't national buys, that they're focusing on regional. You know, they're focusing on Indianapolis and Dayton and Evansville and maybe Chicago and St. Louis and things like that.
So it goes a little farther than that. And you have an opportunity, kind of like a pricing sheet, and you get, you know, X number of markets and you try to decide which ones are best. You know, I did hear kind of secondhand through the discussion that, like, there's no reason for you to buy New York as a market.
Too expensive.
It's too expensive. There are too many factions of people. It's just not worth your buy. But you can buy a bunch of, and I'll call it second tier, everybody below Chicago, LA, and New York are, in my mind, second tier. You can buy a lot of second tiers for one New York. So, you know, they make the decision not to spend money in New York, but that doesn't mean it's just the Midwest. I mean, they're in Kansas City, they're in Dallas. You know, you're in markets where you're going to race. So, plus other markets that are influential, either because they have a racing connection or because we'll be racing similar to that market, or where we know the television. You know, we've talked about this before, but like a Winston-Salem is a huge market. Greenville, South Carolina, huge area for race fans and watching motorsports. So you try to hit those more so than let's just spend money in New York. So it's a tough call.
By the way, another item that I'd had on my list for months, and I don't think I've mentioned in the way of TV spots, and something that maybe not everyone has noticed, and this is, I'm guessing, but I don't know, is just a regional spot. But have you seen the Roger Penske voiced spots labeled Indiana for the winners for the Economic Development Corporation? That is not a racing or an IndyCar spot, but it's using a major asset to this state, meaning IndyCar and the Indianapolis 500, to accentuate and highlight one of the things, along with many other things, that our state has to offer.
I did see it, and the first time I saw it, I thought, what a brilliant organization of assets here to bring the state and us and, you know, our sport and bring it all together. And then I thought, wait a second, this doesn't have anything to do with Penske Entertainment. Yeah. I mean, they're Roger's voicing this, but if you watch that, you come away from this, I think you come away with the sense that the Speedway and IndyCar and Roger Penske made a big purchase here, or at least contributed. Well, they contributed with Roger's voice very much the way Peyton Manning is contributing with his voice in the Speedway's ad. So it really works in the Speedway's favor and IndyCar's favor that Roger did that. And I thought it was a really well done piece on all accounts, not just because it helped our sport, but because I thought it was a good presentation for the state of Indiana.
And that's probably one of those things when we talked about what does Roger Penske and Penske Entertainment being aligned and owning the Indianapolis Motor Speedway do. That's one of the things. By lending his voice and his presence to something like that, you basically get a free marketing campaign. Yeah. Because it wasn't for the Indianapolis 500. It was for, hey, businesses, when you're thinking about where to build your next plant or to open an office or to help you recruit employees to our state, because you see all the logos from some of the top companies like Lilly and Roche in the state of Indiana. You're saying, oh, and by the way, we have the largest single-day sporting event in the world right here in the hometown. Something else you want to add there?
I was just going to say, I've always thought that Mark Miles, because of his, you know, political and Super Bowl, when he chaired the Super Bowl committee here in Indianapolis, just his connections with the business development in this state has been very good. What I've really been impressed with Roger Penske since he took over, what, about 2 years ago, is his determination to be a part of the community. I know that sounds maybe a little bit simplistic, or maybe it seems obvious, but he's put a huge emphasis on, look, I'm not just the guy who lives in Detroit who owns this place. The Speedway is a player in this state. We're a partner. And I'm a partner with you. And I've watched him do this. So when I saw that ad, I think it reminded me just how determined he has been to be a part of this community as owner and steward of this event and this racetrack. So as soon as I finished with the commercial, I immediately turned and thought, this doesn't surprise me. This is who Roger is. And maybe it was a part of Roger that I didn't know existed because I'd been so a part of his competitive life, but not his business life. And he's a real partner in this community. And that includes the entire state. And I don't think I would have put that real top of mind when he purchased the place.
With 100 days out to the Indianapolis 500, I think Friday was the date, and there was a gathering, I would say a little gathering, but it actually looked like there were a decent amount of people here.
Big gathering.
Yeah, a pretty big gathering with several drivers, and it was kind of cool, the ceremony they had for Elio joining the four-time Winners Club on the Yard of Bricks. We also got a date for when we will first see the 100 Days to Indy television special, unscripted reality show, whatever you want to call it, April 27th, 9 p.m. locally on Wish TV and nationally on the CW, which is in most markets. And I believe it's also going to be available on demand through Vice Media. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. After the fact. And you know, you and I have talked about what they're doing and how they're functioning, but I hadn't had a real connection to the staff of Vice and the CW, their group that's doing the work, until Thursday night. I had a chance to go to dinner with the producer and a couple of the key people, and they were telling stories and they were asking me, like, okay, what things are we missing, you know? And I was not surprised, but I was really impressed by the depths at which they've taken these conversations and the things that they're either planning to do. The drivers have invited them into their worlds You think about, you know, parties that the drivers have gone to, individual hobbies that the drivers have. They've been going to drivers' homes. They've been going, they've been following them around. I don't know the connection between the golf docuseries that's and this group, but I think they've been involved with the same. I think they helped do that golf group.
Yes.
Because they've been very, they were sharing kind of things they learned from the golf docuseries filming and applying it to this one. And let me just say, I went from being excited to see this. Now I'm really intrigued by what kind of footage and comments and what kind of storylines they present, because they're digging. These guys are working it. I was impressed.
So the producer that I sat down with, he said when I sat down with him a month or so ago, he had just finished up working on the Netflix golf piece that just debuted a week or so ago. So I'm not sure if everyone did or if he was freelance and involved in both. I don't know if it's the exact same production company, but I know some of the same people were involved. And one of the questions the next time I see him will be, what's the difference in the invite level and the accommodation level between golfers and IndyCar drivers? And while I'm sure that the golfing community understood that this could help them, and they're thinking the same thing, just like tennis, who had their own series out recently. They're thinking, hey, we want to get some of the benefit that Formula One received off to Drive to Survive. Everyone is looking for that next big thing, but I'm still guessing, because I know this, they have been very pleasantly surprised about the level of openness with the drivers. So I'm curious what that's going to look like.
I can add to that. They must have been involved, again, maybe not the entire production team. My son works in this business, so I have a sense for how they subcontract different production companies for different portions of the job. But they were involved also in the tennis one. And they said one of the things that's interesting about the tennis promotion is they talk about in the intro, you know, tennis player A, tennis player B, tennis player C are all really good players. And they basically then come out and say, but none of those players participated in this show. You know, so they were building you up that you were going to get to hear from this tennis player, et cetera. And yet those players didn't provide the access. They said from an IndyCar standpoint, it's been unbelievable. I know they've spent considerable time with Rossi, with Pato, with Grosjean. They have not yet got to Dixon, and they consider Dixon to be one of the really interesting characters that this is all going to kind of, you know, he's the king, so to speak, of this sport, and how much reverence all the other drivers have. And that, not that the other drivers are intimidated, but they all have such reverence for him. And so they are eager to kind of spend time with Dixon. But they said everybody they've had, they rambled off about nine guys, and they didn't have any. The real issue is they're already kind of thinking in their head, what does season two look like? Because they have so much content, so much excitement for the characters. And I think they're going to have plenty of material.
Yep. So that's good. We'll see that coming up. Six episodes starting on April 27th, taking you up to the Indianapolis 500. So let's get into some other news and notes, including for the Indianapolis 500. And by the way, Tony Kanaan will be on the program about an hour from now. Also, a little later on in the show, and this is what you'll start with, because you're going to have the conversation with the new Juncos Hollinger driver. And pronounce his first name for us?
I don't know. I'm actually going to go with Augustin Canapino. I ask him, and he
Augustine.
Provides...
Augustine.
But it doesn't end with an E. It doesn't end with an E. So it's...
What do you mean it doesn't end with an E?
Well, that like would teen? Make it... That would make it, yeah, a teen.
But that's how he pronounced it, because I listened to your interview. I did it phonetically.
Yeah, he actually said it a couple different ways before we went on air, and I said, I don't know what, you know, he gave us
an acceptable, what Americans are most likely going to come up with, Augustine, and he said, I'm fine with that, I don't care, But then you phrased it, so we're giving this away. You've taped this already, which is fine. This is what I like to do as well. You pronounce your name for us, and then we'll give it a go. And to me, it came out as Augustine is how he pronounced his first name. Augustine Canapino.
Well, you'll enjoy. I really hope you listen because I think he's such a fabulous character. I had about a 30-minute conversation on Zoom with him about a month ago, maybe about 3 weeks ago, shortly after he got to the States. And I did an IndyCar.com story, and we talked loosely about that. And I so much enjoyed it that, you know, there was so much angst, I think, from his group that his English isn't very good. And I found him to be delightful. His English is better than I thought it would be. And I wanted to have him on the show. So we did another 20 minutes or so for tonight's show. And I just so much enjoy him. And he, you know, we'll tease it a little bit. He has a nickname that he has used. I guess it's his middle name, and he's used a few times. So it's now going to be kind of the what I think if people pick up on it, it'll be kind of the name that we insiders will refer to him on occasion, and he appreciates, but that's not really his name. So anyway, you can listen to the show. It's great. And I think you're really going to like the driver of the number 78 car, regardless of how you pronounce his name.
Well, he's done a nice job in testing so far, and I think he's already exceeded expectations. And I think what happened at Thermal on an equal playing ground with no one knowing that track and the fact that he was generally around 20th to 22nd kind of shows some early potential. They still didn't know the car, the series, or anything like this car, but the fact that he was better than some already tells you when he's gone to a track for the second time, he's got a chance. There's a reason that Ricardo Juncos has been raving about him for several years since he first came and did the Rolex 24 for his IMSA team. It's going to be difficult, and when he goes to tracks like St. Pete with limited practice time, a street course, that's going to be tough. And he very well might be last, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have potential. So good for them. So we'll get to learn a little bit more about his story later on. And then we'll hear from Tony Kanaan, the very first guest on this program when we debuted in 2008. So I was out of town last week, and I only saw Twitter notes from the most recent retirement press conference for Tony. So tell me what we learned out of that. Because I still, without hearing it, talking to him, I think I'd still say if he finishes third in the Indy 500 again that we'll see him in 2024. Did he address that?
Yeah, he did. And okay. And I heard you say that on JMV this afternoon, and I agree with that. I think because I said, come on now, you finished third last year. Because see, what really is the story is he was set with a 2-year contract expiring at Chip Ganassi Racing at the end of last year's race. He was set to be done. He had pretty well convinced himself. He knew that finding the third or fourth car on a team was going to be difficult as a one-off and expensive. And he was prepared to be done last year after the 500. Then he goes and finishes third. And really, we thought, you know, when that last restart comes, he's got a chance to win the race. If he were to win the race or finish in the top three this year, somebody's going to call him. I mean, if you're Ed Carpenter Racing, if you're, you know, think about all the teams out there that have a good program that could be a race winning car that would be like the third or fourth car on a program. I think you have to consider him. And so, you know, we'll see if that phone call comes. But, you know, the reality is, most likely what's going to happen, because this is the Indy 500, 500 miles, 200 laps, 33 competitors. He's not going to finish in the top two or three. He might. Obviously, he's done it. He's done it like six or seven times, but he's also raced 21 or two of these. So, you know, still the odds are that he doesn't finish in the top three. But if he does, I think there's a chance. But he's also pretty realistic that maybe it's just time to make your intentions known, get on with your life. You know, I suppose you leave a 3 or 4% chance that it could happen next year again, but he's needs to move on, and I think he's good with that.
I think it's a combination of he's realistic and he's looked at the options and they are not super plentiful in good situations. Now,
exactly.
If he wanted to drive in 2024, I can almost guarantee he would be offered a drive. But he doesn't want to do it just to do it. So there, now that cuts out a few teams that aren't really options, and certain programs. And every seat on every team is not the same. So he already knows that one is going away at Arrow McLaren. They are unlikely to do five cars next year. And it could need to be six. Because if Felix Rosenquist has a great season, they might. I think this is unlikely, but I think Zach Brown has left the door open that they might go to four cars full time. Then Kyle Larson is a fifth, and there's no way they're running a sixth next year unless Tony Kanaan wins the race. And by the way, all this that I say, if he wins the race in an Arrow McLaren car, they're going to find a spot for him at Arrow McLaren next year, right? He won't have to go looking anywhere else. But assuming he doesn't, even if he finishes third or fourth, then it's, well, he was just at Ganassi. Maybe they could revisit that again. Andretti, I think the relationship is still solid enough there. There are other options out there. But he realizes, we are now getting well below 50-50 for something I'm going to find acceptable. So I would like to enjoy this and celebrate with the fans. And then I also think that Tony is a smart business person. He is a smart marketer. And if you, as a former winner and one of the most popular drivers that we've seen at this event ever, right? Not the most, and it's impossible to say, but he's on that top, whatever, 15 or 20, maybe, of the most popular drivers ever at the Indianapolis 500, and he is going to be celebrated massively. He's, even if he has a bad car, is never a factor. By saying and announcing his intent that this is last one, he guarantees TV time. And it is very difficult to guarantee TV time if you're not running up front with so much going on. So that helps the partners that he has. And then if it does go well, well then, all of a sudden it will be, well, we can't let Tony Kanaan go away. He can still win this thing. And the momentum will get started already for 2024. So I'm going to say, I'm telling you, there's a chance.
Yeah, but I think you have to be realistic, and he is, and good for him. I know he's already lobbying to drive the pace car in 2024, and honestly, I'd have to consider him.
I'm for that.
You know, one of the two guys that you might want to have in the two-seater moving forward. To me, it's either, you know, does Elio want to do it or does TK want to do it? Either one of them would be terrific, because we're pretty close to the point where Mario probably doesn't need to be doing it on a regular basis. I think we're there already. But, you know, you're going to need somebody like those two guys. And you're right. I think in my lifetime of covering the sport, if you take out the Foyts and Mario and maybe Rutherford, I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to name three others this popular. Danica was extremely popular. Elio is certainly more popular than TK, I think. But it's close. It's close.
It depends on who you ask. I think you'd get some pushback on that. That Kanaan over the years, especially until Elio won the fourth, might have I think a lot of us would
it's
say
close.
Kanaan has received a bigger ovation that Kanaan has received a bigger ovation than Elio until maybe the last couple of years.
Well,
but it is close, either way.
It is close, and I think those are the only two that merit the conversation. You throw Danica in the early part of her Indy 500 career for sure, and her broad-based appeal is certainly at the 500 was huge. But you know, those are the three, and I don't think there's anybody close to Hinch has been popular, but not so much outside, you know, the core fan base.
So I'm glad that Tony announced this. We can celebrate him even more and don't have to tiptoe around it and just state it for what he said. He said this is his last one. So that's the statement right there. We don't even have to in the broadcast get into deep dives on speculation. He says this is his last one. And with that, I think most of us, certainly I will not begrudge him at all if he changes his mind. Everyone should reserve the right to change their mind on things. And if the right opportunity comes around, we will welcome him back. He's like a rock band. that does four farewell tours because they're smart marketers. They know. And by the way, each time they may realistically think this is probably the last one, but why not give it a little more juice as well? So good to Tony Kanaan. We'll continue to celebrate him, and you'll hear from him coming up in the next hour. We've got plenty more to get into. Probably some notes that Kurt still got on the table from last week, from 2 weeks ago that we never got to on the thermal test as we move into the season. I loved your either-or conversation with Nathan Brown, so we may revisit that in future weeks on the program. Tweets are welcome at KevinLee23, at Kurt Cavendish, Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Hi, this is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside.
Kurt, I put the wrong headphones on, so even when you come into the studio, sometimes there are snafus. Why can't I hear anything?
This is user error. User error.
It is user error. The facilities are phenomenal. I can see the monument. It's all lit up beautifully. It's good to be downtown. Thanks for staying with us on Trackside. You got something for us at KevinLee23, at Kurt Cavan for the program tonight. Before we continue, and I haven't been able to talk to you during the break to see what is on your mind, so you'll have to jump in, but I will go through a few tweets that I've received over the last few days that are topical. Our man Paul Ingram, Paul J. Ingram 56 out in Monterey, sends me a screen grab and actually a quick video from WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. They have indeed started destroying the previous surface, and with the weather getting better now, construction projects continue, and they're looking to repave. So I think that's something that a lot of us thought was going to happen last fall. Did not. They moved the crossover. They replaced that first, and now they're on to repaving. So we're going to see fresh, fast, new pavement at Road America and Laguna Seca this year.
I just can't. I've been stuck on the sentence when you said he's in Monterey, and I thought if there's three better places in this country than Monterey, I haven't been to them. So I'm very envious.
The real Kurt St. Angelo tweets and asks when, I forget what he was responding to, but he asks, how about an IndyCar flag football game on Carb Day? I'm sort of kidding, but not. I'd also follow Graham and Scott McLaughlin for 9 on the IMS golf course. Oh, I think it was when, with incredulity, would that be the correct word? I was talking about 6 million people watching the Pro Bowl, which is now a flag football game. You know, a million more than watch the Indy 500, so that's a bit of frustration. So his comment about flag football, I don't think we'll get, and he knows that, we'll get 6 million people to watch IndyCar drivers play flag football, but maybe there is some sort of creative take there that might work for Peacock or something otherwise. I would watch those guys play golf, too, because they're good.
Keep in mind that, and maybe many people don't know this, but part of particularly through the 70s, those guys played softball games in the infield. I could see, you could see a softball game. Could you see a pickleball match? Could you see, have some of these activities which showcase what great athletes these guys are? Now, maybe, not every guy would sign up to play softball or play pickleball or hit golf balls, but you could have enough to showcase some of the things between the guys. I mean, we're seeing some of that, but these guys are good athletes, and there's ways to do it. And like I said, there used to be maybe if you've gone back and seen some of Robin's photos over the years, when they played softball at Victory Field in Indianapolis, they had a team, Gary Bettenhausen, Tony Bettenhausen, Merle, Larry Rice,
Robin used to organize basketball teams. I don't know that the team owners would like to take the chances of guys getting injured. So it depends on when it is, though. If you did it after the season, I wouldn't think you'd worry about that too much. But another example is, I don't feel like we have to accentuate their athleticism. Any of us that care know they are athletic. It might not always apply to basketball or softball because most of these drivers have been pretty singularly focused since they were 7 or 8 years old and may not have grown up doing a lot of other things. There's probably only 4 or 5 that spent a lot of time playing stick and ball sports, but there are still things that they can do, like New Garden's ping pong tournament. Exactly. Just something that gets us up and close, gets us a chance to hear from the drivers, raise money for a good cause, you know, those things, bowling tournaments, golf outings, all those kind of things are really cool. Vincent 1701 tweets and says, thanks for asking my answering my question the other day. Thermal Club versus Sebring question had more to do with taking days away, taking away money from Sebring on rich people track days. So I think he tweeted about he heard there is a new sort of thermal type of club, or there's already the Concourse Club in Miami, but I think he's alluding to something else in Central Florida being built along the lines of what is it called, Audubon in Joliet, where the Ray Halls have a condo and so forth. So he's saying like Porsche Days, BMW Driving School, that's where my question was going. And if indeed it is going to happen, that is potentially a consideration. But it's supply and demand. If someone thinks that they can create something that is more conducive for those type of clients, unfortunately, you know, they may look at Sebring kind of being a long ways away from everything. It's 2 hours away from any airport that you want to find. If you can build a track that is built more on amenities, Sebring is a wonderful facility if you're just there to drive race cars. And by the way, the hotel is nice, and the restaurant at the hotel is nice, but there's not a lot else around there. So there potentially could be a market in Florida. So now I know why we get tweets on that. When I have headphones on, I can hear you typing too.
I just was adding.
So I get these tweets say, well, who's typing so loud? And I don't hear it. And I think, I'm not typing. So now we can answer. It's Kurt that's typing during the program.
Well, that was about four to six words. It wasn't much. So okay. I didn't know it was that impactful.
You got a powerful typing patterns. So yeah, that's what
I've
we
done
know
a
on
lot
that.
Of. I've done a lot of typing in my day.
Vincent also says, I think Will Power did 20 or less laps in the hybrid over 2 days. Know what happened? No, I don't know specifically, other than it wasn't working as well as they hoped. I think I saw the first day they had gearbox issues. You know, I would say this is not a major alarm. This is a new technology. And if you watched all the Rolex 24, you kind of heard us detailing all of the challenges the sports car teams had in testing, where most of them didn't see any way more than a car or two was going to last for 24 hours. And they weren't even sure if any of them were going to last because of the teething problems that come in with a new technology. So we're still a year away from that. And when you change one thing, it impacts other things. So they're going to spend a lot of time sitting and watching and fixing things. That's the way it always is with a new car, especially when you do an entirely new technology.
And by the way, it was not, I'm sure, I don't know this, but, you know, I'm sure it wasn't all the new technology, because sometimes
correct,
there are just issues.
Yeah, the gearbox may have had nothing at all to do with acclimating it. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. I don't know. But sometimes things just go wrong, especially in a test day.
Yep.
All right, so any other tweets are welcome at Kevin Lee 23, at Kurt Cavan tonight's on the program. Did you get a chance to listen to our Mark Miles conversation? Anything that surprised you out of that from last week?
No, other than I really felt like, and if you want to go back and listen to it, you know, you can catch the podcast, but I thought Mark was pretty transparent with you. There are times when I think, you know, people who are in executive positions skirt around conversations. I thought Mark was pretty spot on based on the conversations I've had with him. I thought you got a real sense for where his head is and where the company is headed on some points. I think that was my biggest takeaway from the specifics. I don't know that I can recite some of the specifics that he brought up, but I liked, I thought he was transparent because I don't think he left anything out based on conversations I've had with him on the same topics, if that makes sense.
So new markets, you know, I asked him about Mexico and Argentina, and, you know, I suppose I knew Brazil was still a possibility, but I've just kind of moved on because, you know, for 6 years we heard that that was going to happen and it never did. So I've kind of moved on, but I still do see the two gentlemen that are heavily involved as promoters for those events at race events. So we'd keep that in mind. And I think Mark mentioned an important point out of that. If you're looking at international markets, if the time zone is conducive, it makes it easier to do. And Mexico is North America. So yes, it's international, but it's North America. So, you know, obviously you're talking similar time zones. But that's what Brazil and Argentina offer you, an hour or two difference from East time zone, I believe. So that makes that a little bit easier to get done, that at least you're not only not having an event that your fans generally cannot go to, but is going to get no television audience. Because if you race in Japan, you're not going to get much of a live television audience. You're not going to get much of a live television audience if you race in Australia. Doesn't mean you don't do it, but it's just one thing that you're going to give up. But you don't have to give that up if you race in Brazil or Argentina.
And one of the things he said that pretty well put the kibosh on a race at the Thermo Club is, you know, he made the point, look, we race in Long Beach. It's the same market. We're pretty well represented in California. So, you know, I think that for me kind of went, oh, yeah, I guess, you know, we're trying to, as fans and spectators of this sport, we're trying to be excited about a new venue and a new place that we haven't been to as a race event. And yet it's not that far from Long Beach. And it isn't, well, you know what I mean? It's not a, it wasn't a, it doesn't feel like, it feels to him more like it's kind of the same market
now,
if you will.
If the racetrack was open to hosting a crowd,
agreed,
offering a sanctioning fee and so forth, you'd move that past that pretty quickly. I get what he's saying, that if you're going to create you know, an event like that, I don't think it matters where it is. If you're talking 5,000-7,000 people and a made for TV audience that's only entertaining the top sponsors and partners of the series, it could be 3 miles away from Long Beach, and it's not going to impact Long Beach. Ideally, you would get to new markets that you're not already in. You'd try to get to the East Coast, some bigger cities, some things like that. But if that event made sense and was a moneymaker, I see no problem racing 3 hours away from the Grand Prix of Long Beach 2 months earlier. I don't think that's going to have any negative impact on Long Beach, because that event is strong enough, and let's face it, there's a certain amount of partygoers there that aren't aware that there's another event going on. And that's not a knock on that crowd, because I think people might be surprised that that is one of the events where you and I get stopped more as much as anywhere else. There are hardcore race fans. There are car people in Southern California that come to that event. That's why it's one of the reasons it's such a great event, because you have this mix of kids that are just hanging out and having a party for 3 days, but then you have hardcore race fans there as well, and that's how you get that big of a crowd over 3 days, you know, 40 or 50,000 people legitimately every single day.
Yeah, and it's a big crowd. I think that's the ultimate point here. So when you have a big crowd, you're going to have a nice mix of people, and that's what we see year after year at Long Beach.
So we probably should speak on the Daytona 500 just a little bit, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. winning the race. Cool to see. Ricky was hanging out at the Rolex 24. He'd been driving a sprint car, I think, or a midget or something, in the neighborhood, and texted Steve Letarte and said, hey, where are you guys at? So he came and sat up in the booth with us for our overnight shift and got on the air for a little bit. And then even after he got off the air, just hung out and rode with us back to the bus. And we talked a little bit about what their season was going to be coming up and so forth. So he's a people that I think like to see. You know, I guess what I'll get to next is, we all remember the 2001 Indianapolis 500 and the conundrum that presented of determining who won the race. They had back-to-back races over the weekend that eeny, meeny, miny, mo. You know, we're just going to have to trust you that that's when you push the button, that the caution came out, because I don't see any way that you can prove one way or the other that this is when we determined who was in front, because the lead exchanged in both circumstances and they determined a winner. And I don't see any lawsuit or court case coming from these.
I don't either. When I saw it live, I thought Joey Logano won the race. I thought he, again, to my Indy 500 2002 conversation, I thought Elio was...
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, 2002. That Elio was in front when the caution should have come out. I don't know when the caution did come out.
Yeah.
And when I saw the car veer into the wall and hit the wall, Logano was in the lead, in my opinion. So I really was you know, I guess happy for Logano and Team Penske that they won the race. And then, you know, 40 seconds to 90 seconds later, Ricky Stenhouse has determined the winner. And then when I watched the replay, I suppose, you know, there was a little bit of a lag. And Joey even made the comment then thereafter was, depending on when you push the button. And it's a bang, bang kind of thing. I thought Joey won the race. I go back to really what, you know, what's difficult about this race, and you heard it from Kyle Busch in his discussions after coming out of the care center. He's like, I wish they'd just tell me what lap I'm going to crash and what time I'll come out of the care center. just tell me going in. And, you know, because again, the best car didn't win the race. I mean, Ricky may have had a good car, but some of those Fords were better than other Fords. And Ricky was in the right place at the right time at the right ending. But, you know, this is such a crapshoot race. And it wasn't always like that. We like the entertainment value. But, you know, we seem to have these. And, you know, when Kyle Busch came out, and I know it's Kyle Busch and he's going to say things, but they ask him, yeah, he finally said, who won the race? What lucky guy won the race?
Yeah.
And they told him, and he just rolled his eyes and he said, yeah, figures. As if to say that wasn't the best car.
Well, and it is so random at those tracks. And I know, and we had a few years where the Indy 500 was a little bit more like that, but it was never anywhere close to as random. And the frustrating part is if you're back in the line, when they're side by side, two by two, all the way through 34th place, you ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's other than if you're willing to take a chance and then you need someone else to take a chance to open things up. So eventually it does work, but if nobody moves, you ain't moving. And it is very random, and then there's going to be a crash that impacts everyone else. You know, it reminded me the Kyle Busch comment. I saw this spooled up on Twitter again when Tony Stewart 10 or 15 years ago said something like, you know, this is disappointing because we've let the fans down. Because not fully half of the field has their car destroyed. And until we produce a race where at least 50% of the cars have crashed, we've let the fans down because that's what they want to see. Just tongue-in-cheek, straight-faced the entire time saying, no, I'm disappointed. We haven't done our job because we haven't crashed enough cars here today. So the difference with... And the reason why it becomes even more difficult in NASCAR, because you're right, the guy who won the race was not leading in either case when the crash happened. But NASCAR, I think it's legit. They never throw the yellow right when the crash happens. They are first looking and assessing for at least 3 or 4 seconds, is there any way we can race back to the line? Is anyone in danger? Is the track going to be blocked on the cooldown lap? Or do we need to dispense safety vehicles right now? Is anyone upside down? If all those are negative, then they're going to let them race back to the line. So I think they probably did get it correct, that the caution did not come out for 2 or 3 seconds after the crash happened. And by that point, the lead had changed hands.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yep. Hey, did you see the guy from Anderson that won the ARCA race?
I did.
His name is Greg Van Alst. I don't know how old Greg is, but he's not 22 years old. ARCA is so interesting because you have drivers in other races as young as 15 or 16. You have to be 18 to run at Daytona. But you can run from 18 to 83. They often have drivers in their 60s and 70s. In that race, and I'm going to guess Greg is somewhere in his 40s and has been at it for a while, and it's a family-run company, and he legit won the race. He was good all day. He didn't totally luck into things, so congratulations to Greg Van Alst and Sam Pierce Chevrolet is a company that a lot of us are familiar with, especially if you went to Ball State and up in that area. So congrats. Really happy for those guys and for Greg to be able to win that race.
And I rooted for Connor pretty hard, but I still do not know how a sanctioning body allows a first timer to be in a stock car in the Daytona 500 or the qualifying race at speed, having never turned a lap in one of those cars.
Well, how about the fact that your biggest race of the year doesn't have a lap of practice before qualifying or before two races?
It's unbelievable.
You know, I get the idea. I'm assuming the idea is we don't want people and teams spending money all winter long to develop a qualifying car. So you are going to have, but you know what? They're going to try to develop it in the wind tunnel because it's all in theory. And I don't get this. And I still think there would be some value of having the cars on track. People will watch a practice session for the Daytona 500 on Tuesday. It's the first time you've seen those cars since it's not that long of an off season, but it's still been the first time in 2.5 months. You'll get 200,000 or 300,000 or 400,000 people watching a practice session at 7 p.m. on Tuesday night on FS1. Give them a chance. Give the rookies a chance. Give someone new. Now we know why Elio wanted nothing to do with this.
We know that they proved they could do it in the 2020 season. You know, they didn't have practices. They just showed up in race. But that's different. You know, doing that at Dover or
It wasn't the first race of the season either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, first race of the season on one of the most, we'll say high speed pack racing, and you're not going to let them practice? I mean, my goodness.
Yeah. So Connor had driven stock cars before, and he was probably given a license because he had done, I think maybe he did a truck race at Vegas. I think
yes,
he had done
and
a NASCAR.
He did an Xfinity race
at Vegas.
No, he did. I think he did a truck race, and then he did the Roval.
Yeah, he's done road course race, and he did a road course cup race last year as well. So it wasn't his first cup race, but I think he qualified because he had done a super speedway race in a NASCAR sanctioned series. And that was, they probably also look in the Indy 500. But you're right, it's a totally different circumstance. I had no doubt whether Connor was qualified to do this, but...
Give him a chance.
Well, it's just silly. It's just silly. Let's find out if the equipment works. And then from a safety aspect, you've got someone coming into a race with 20 cars that's never been on track. And even if he had done the two laps of qualifying, that doesn't do anything. So good for him. If you didn't see it, the car wouldn't work.
He did pretty well.
The car didn't work for qualifying. So the first time in the car was in the twins. And it's bouncing like, you know, the car in Breaking Bad that Tuco Salamanca is in Jesse's car. It's one of those kind of cars for several laps. And Connor doesn't know what it's supposed to be doing out of this. The race, so he makes it because two guys crash. And he kind of lucks his way in a couple of laps down. The race starts, and I see him going back and forth on timing and scoring, passing, who was it? Jimmy Johnson, someone of significance. He was running 31st or 32nd for several laps. And then apparently his rear-view mirror, which I think is now digital, quit working, and he started dropping like a rock. Radio didn't work for a little while. And again, it's why Elio said, no thank you. No thank you. I'm not going to do this. And Connor made the right call as well. Like he said, hey, what do I got to lose? I may never have this chance again. He did it. He's now done it. And if he does get the chance to do it again, at least he has a little bit of an idea of what he's in for. And I think you give him a decent car, he'd be good at this. So good for him.
I agree. I just thought they all should have first race of the season at Daytona. They ought to have some practice time.
All right, we'll see what we've missed coming up in a moment. And guests galore coming up in hour number two. We've still got another full segment to chat about things coming up. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Simon Pagenaud, and you're listening to Trackside.
Simon's already a race winner in 2023. He had a fantastic stint in the final couple of hours, and maybe 3 hours or so left. He was the next to the last driver for Meyer Shank Racing before giving over to Tom Blomqvist to win the Rolex 24 for Acura at the end of January, and we are less than 2 weeks away from the start of the NTT IndyCar Series season. Hour number two, Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. Kurt, I know everyone has been clamoring for the start of IndyCar season for a long time, and it feels like it's been forever since we've seen cars on track in September at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. I have a tip for everyone to make the off-season go quicker. Be very, very busy. Enjoy some other sports as well. That helps. Or be in charge of the financial obligations to get a car on track. And in that case, the season is not nearly long enough. I am still not ready. And there are things I like to do in the off season when I have a little extra time around the house that are now going to wait until next October to get done. So we've missed our chance. And we're ready to go coming up at St. Pete for what was known as the Road to Indy. We don't know what it's called now. I'm still calling it the Road to Indy. But the path to IndyCar, their season really starts this weekend. Their official spring training is at Sebring starting on Monday and Tuesday. So I'll be headed down there on Sunday to supervise. And actually, I'll be doing some of the media seminar training for the young drivers. And the veteran drivers have had enough of me because this, I think, will be the third year in a row that I'm doing that. But I'm cheap because I'm already there and going to be there anyway. So I'll share what knowledge I have for that. So we look forward to seeing how that goes. Some more driver announcements in the junior categories over the last few days. Indy Next, Indy Lights, formerly, will be at St. Pete. And I think I haven't done the car count. That's on my to-do list this week, is to get all my notes done. But I think they have 19 cars, something like that. The level below that my son Jackson is racing in, they're going to have 19 or 20 cars. That's the most they've had in a long time. And I'll admit, one of our thought process on whether he should move up or not, whether he does another year of USF 2000, jokingly I said, you know, they generally have 11 or 12 cars, so you have a decent day. You can do the old NASCAR thing and say, hey, I had a good top 10 car today. That's not going to be so easy. And another kid came over today and signed that came from FIA F3. They've got two or three kids that have finished on the podium in F3. One driver from F2, the runner-up with several wins in British F3 from last year. So, and then along with some guys who won races last year in the series. So it's going to be stacked, and that's going to be fun. USF 2000, I'm going to guess, has 25, 26 cars like normal. USF Juniors have a big field as well. They won't be at St. Pete, but they'll be at Sebring at the end of March. And shameless plug, I'll mention this for one of Jackson's charity partners. Race for RP has become, along with the IU Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center, our two big focuses for different reasons. So Race for RP it's an autoimmune disease, and my wife has an autoimmune condition. So we met them a few years ago, and they asked if Jackson would like to be involved, and we've kind of taken it to another level. So what we're basically doing is, if you would like to have, I had someone last year ask if they could put their grandkid's name on Jackson's car. I won't mention the name. He's a regular listener to the show, and we thank him for that. So I thought, you know what, let's do it another level, and let's put a bunch of names for 100% of the money going to the charity, to Race for RP. So for $100, you can have your name, and we'll put a sticker with all the names on the top of the side pods for Jackson's car. And for a $500 donation, you could even send us a corporate logo, and we'll give you a 3x5 or 6-inch sticker or something like that. And it'll stay on the car for St. Pete and Sebring, so both of the March races. So I retweeted it today. Jackson has tweeted as well. Or you can just Google Race for RP. I think it's raceforrp.org. And at the top, there's a banner that says, click here to donate to be a part of Jackson's program. And if you donate, if you are coming to St. Pete or Sebring, so we will say tickets not included, but if you're going to be there, just send me a message somewhere along the lines, and we'll coordinate, and maybe we'll put that on social media before St. Pete or on the radio show next week, and we'll coordinate a time on Sunday morning where everybody meets at Jackson's car. You don't need a special pass to get to the USF Pro 2000 paddock, and we'll give a little walking tour of Jackson's car for all of those that donate. Many already have. our buddy Matt Arcoletta. I feel like Matt should have gotten his name on the car anyway because of what he's done for all of us in the IndyCar world and for this program. So thank you to Matt. My buddy Don Rohr sent in a donation, and a few others have as well. So that is available on social media. What else are we missing? Next week is our last show before the season starts, and it's only an hour, so 8 to 9, and we may not do a guest next week. I think we need to do our fearless predictions that we'll try to write down and see how right or more likely wrong we are at the end of the season.
Well, we wouldn't have got that that Scott McLaughlin last year would win more races than Will Power. I wouldn't have got that for anything. So there's probably going to be a Scott McLaughlin this year, somebody that we don't have our 100% focus on, who we might think is a secondary character who will step up and win a couple races. So it'll be interesting. You know, this whole notion of Joseph Newgarden saying he wanted to win 10 races, I don't know how he wins 10 races against his own teammates, let alone this field. So it'll be a healthy discussion next week.
Yeah, that's a good point. Finishing as the top Penske driver in 10 races is a pretty
that's
good
a
achievement,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you can do that, if anyone finishes ahead of all of the Penskes, let's just say anyone, 10 times, I think they win the championship.
I think so, too. And by the way, your race for RP is not for Roger Penske, who did have a birthday this week.
He doesn't need the money.
He doesn't need the money.
And it's nice, by the way. I think what is the banner that we see at St. Pete? There is an RP at St. Pete.
RP funding.
Yes, different organization. Although maybe
different
we need to bring them together. But that is nice of them to put RP on the side of all of the walls at St. Petersburg. But no, that's not the same organization. Although you do see Race for RP in other racing entities. They got started in sports car racing, and people have asked before, where did this come from? But essentially, there was a gentleman driver in Ferrari Challenge who has been very successful in business, and his wife developed relapsing polychondritis, and he thought, well, you know, I've got a little bit of a platform here. So they created Race for RP, and then they decided, you know what, we can use motorsport. Let's align with some of the professional drivers that coached Neil and that they had relationships with, and said, hey, would you put a sticker on your car? And that's how it's kind of grown, and that's how it started with us. Would you put a sticker on the car and use the platform that you have to spread the word? So I know we're talking about racing, but I'll give one more factoid. 1 in 5 people are impacted by an autoimmune condition. And that was a staggering number when I found that out, because there are so many things that are in the autoimmune category that no one really understands how it develops, in many cases how it's treated, and all of the research kind of goes into one category that potentially could help 20% of the population that is going to be impacted at some point. So that's that. I'm really looking forward to our categories, and we'll just touch on some of the fascinating things that I'm already thinking about this year. How's Kyle Kirkwood going to do? What's Rossi going to be like in this new car? I think Rossi could win the championship. I think he could be 12th.
Agreed.
Not everyone acclimates to a new car, and we have seen that car can be fickle. If the car is good and it suits Alexander Rossi, he's still a guy that is good as anyone in the business, but that's just a major wild card in that situation. It's one of the reasons why I talked about Pato last year. I think Pato has got it figured out, and he's likely going to be top 5 or top 6, but it was a question. Where is Pato? It might go great. He might slip back a little bit this year. What's Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan going to be like this year? I really think they're going to be better. I think Lundgaard's going to be awesome. I think Jack Harvey is going to be significantly better, have more like a Rosenquist-type year. And Graham will do what he always does. He probably won't qualify great, but he'll race really well. Rinus VK, we haven't talked about him for a little while. He's one of those guys that could break out and be a top 5 type of guy, but the consistency hasn't been there enough. What's he going to be this season? Romain Grosjean might need a season to continue in IndyCar, because I'm going to guess he's making a pretty decent salary. And yes, there's more to it than results for providing a return to DHL, but they're probably going to want to run up front a little bit more than what he's been doing.
Yeah, I agree with all those. And I think next week will be a lively discussion. You mentioned that I gave either ors to Nathan Brown last week. Maybe I'll come up with some kind of a similar type format for you, because I'd like to hear your weighing in. And I'll probably weigh in more than I did with Nathan.
So that should probably be something we do anytime there is not a race the previous week. We've got a race coming off the last week. You know, we've always got, we're overloaded. But when we have a week off, that's always a good topic to have on that front. So we'll get into all that. Twitter questions are always welcome for next week at KevinLee23, at Kurt Cavan on the program. We've got plenty more to come on the show tonight. We're all going to learn how to pronounce the driver, the number 78, Juncos Hollinger show, a car with Kurt on the show coming up in just a little bit. And Tony Kanaan, one last ride. Details on that coming up in just a moment. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Tony Kanaan, and you're listening to Trackside.
As promised, we've got time with Tony Kanaan. I think you were the first guest on Trackside back in 2008. So that's how far back this stuff goes. How young we are. Well, that's how I don't see. Let's first make the point. I don't think you're 48 years old.
Everybody says that. Why? You think I'm younger or older?
I think you're older than that. But I don't know that we know that one way or the other. So what is the truth on that? You really are?
48. I'm 1974, December 31st, 74.
Well, he did repeat that pretty quickly. So we've heard a lot of the comments. It's now been a few days since you announced your last drive, we'll call it. I don't know what we're calling it, but we will call it that. I guess the question, and Nathan Brown of the Indianapolis Star asked you this question, and I just kept coming back to it in the hours and days that I've known about this. Why now? I mean, I wrote for IndyCar.com, maybe the risk of a disappointing finish in this year's Indy 500 wouldn't have let you make the decision on your terms. Maybe that ultimately is the answer, but I guess I'd like to hear it from you.
Well,
because you wouldn't have had to make this decision.
No, Gordon, yeah, well, I didn't. But then, like you said, we're in a sport that you're only as good as your last race. So then we had a great year, a great race last year. We come back this year, and for some reason, we have a bad one. And because I'm a part-time already, I'm being slowing it down as far as the amount of races that IndyCar that I do. And then I don't get another ride, because there are a bunch of the young guns right now. They're so good that they have plenty of good drivers.
And contracts have already been set largely.
Correct. I mean, obviously I have to be the third or the fourth or the fifth car in the team. And that costs a lot more when you add that. So then you just basically, they force you to retire because you can't find a job. After last year, I was fine. I had a great run. I said, you know what? I'm good to go out this way. Then I get a phone call because we did so well. Do you want to do it again? And I think I'm going to think to myself that I can do it again until I'm 90 years old. You ask Mario Andretti if he can do it again, he will say he would do it again.
He also ended up kind of in the fence, you know.
Right. trying to do it again in my car at the time. So part of that decision was I'm going out on my own terms. And then I know the next question will be, well, what about if you win? You know, I think the decision is being made, Kurt. But at the end of the day, my opinion is if you're a real race car driver, you're never turning it down a race car. But to add to that is I would never come back to this place just to fill up a car in the grid. I need to know I, Tony Kanaan, I'm competitive enough that I can still win, but also I want to be in a position in a team that is going to give me that as well, which in IndyCar, thank God we have 33 cars here that are going to be having a chance to win. So that was part of the decision making. Why now?
So the question was asked of me last week, you know, what is it that sums up Tony Kanaan? And I think about, you know, where you came from in Brazil and how you struggled so early in your career on ovals. And the fact that you've posted this unbelievable resume at Indy, I mean, you may know this, you may not. You're the first to lead 15 different races at Indianapolis.
No way.
Dixon has now done it, but he's done it the last couple of years. So you've done that. You've won the pole in one of those great qualifying efforts of all time. In 05, you and Elio have gone back and forth. You've led more laps than Elio.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I haven't read the right laps.
Well,
but I did.
So, I mean, it's kind of unbelievable that this career has been defined, or at least from my perspective, and I've spent a lot of time with you over the years, that it's been defined by not only this Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the 500, but oval races in general.
Yeah. But, you know, that tells you how big this place is. Because if you had told me, oh, you know, you led 15 times in so-and-so oval,
yeah,
it wouldn't be a big deal, right? And it's this race, it's this place. And I think because I was so bad in the ovals in the beginning, that's why I became so good. It's something that I had to master. I had to relearn. I had to rethink. I had to just really understand what the car behaved, which wasn't natural to me. And that, I think, you know, my whole story. And I think that's what defined me, was adversity. Oh, it's not possible. You're never going to be good in a place like this. You're never going to make it to IndyCar. The never is probably the trigger that it's probably the word that if I have a pet peeve, don't tell me never, because that is in my book. It shouldn't exist. That's to answer your question. I think it was, you know, being bad made me good.
Tony Kanaan joins us. Obviously, your voice is pretty synonymous with the show and the sport. I went back and watched the 2013, the whole broadcast. Here's something you may not know. It took them 35 minutes in the pre-race to mention your name. It took them a long time. I think there were only four drivers that they had not mentioned before they even got to you. Is that just because you had been so, you know, you just hadn't been able to get it done, or just maybe how good the field was, or whatever, but it did take them a long time.
It was funny because that was a strategy that it worked.
It was a strategy?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Not the strategy for them not to talk about me, because I can't control what people talk about. But we were a small team. We were not on the top of the charts all month long. We worked in the race car from day one to carb day. I've never actually ran a qualifying lap until qualifying. It was the years that we didn't have big boosts or anything. You didn't have to do that. We started 12th. So why are they going to talk about the guy starting 12 that is in a team that has one car? I mean, it's like Jimmy Vassar, Cal Coven. They don't have any money. And we were not a factor. We wanted it to be the element of surprise, and we were. And that's exactly what – and I loved it, because there was no attention to us. It was not people bothering me to talk to me. Oh, is this the night? Oh, you're so good. You know, people – you know what I'm talking about. People picked you to win this year. You know, I interviewed the other guy. All that we do to put pressure on people. And I had zero pressure, and it was awesome.
You also had a torn ligament in your thumb.
Yep.
You were on your way to kind of, I don't know, a career maybe defined by things that were bad.
Yep.
You know, you'd had that big crash in 09.
Well, that year, if you remember... So, okay, talk about the 500 times. I mean, we had so many things, right? We had the big crash that the suspension broke. Then we were leading halfway in rain.
Yep.
And they didn't want to cancel the race. And then they restarted the race 3 hours later, and we did 10 laps in rain again. So it's kind of like, you know, if it was going to rain, why you didn't give it to me? Spinning in the oil in my first year that I was leading 6 seconds ahead of everybody. So you name it. Sorry, I forgot.
He forgot the question. Let me ask you this. Was that race was really interesting? The race, 68 different race leads. Part of it was the way the aero was set up, and you could pass people. And was it the most intense race that you were involved in?
100%. I mean, the most, one of the most, right? When we used to go to Texas.
Texas.
Right? You know, but it was the fastest. And then not, I know it was the fastest at the time as well, as far as lap time and time, average speed. But for me as a driver, it was the fastest race because you were so caught up in trying to pass people that you did. Like, you know, usually when the race is kind of like slow, in quote unquote slow, like, oh man, still 100 laps to go. Oh, it's only halfway. It went so fast. It was fast.
Yeah, you were always sort of dealing with somebody at some point. Right. You had those, ironically, you had the Andretti's that you had to beat kind of at the
end. Yeah, the team that fired me the year before, 2 years before.
You had to beat. Was Hunter Ray the guy you had to beat in that one?
No, actually it was Munoz. Well, Hunter Ray was because it was a big name. Munoz was the rookie, but he had nothing to lose, and his car was fast, and he had no, like, you know, sometimes the element of not knowing what's going on, it actually works in your benefit, and that's where he was going on the apron, low as he could, and you're like, he's
going to
crash.
But that was a climb.
Right, but people are like, he's going to crash. He's not going to crash because he doesn't know any better, and so Munoz was the guy.
You also famously said, right before the restart, I'm going to go for it. It's going to be all or nothing. You probably had said that before. Had you ever said that in your career?
No. I said that time, and I said that last year. The only two times I said that in a race car, and it was here. And last year, was obviously, I was picturing 2013. That's what's happening.
Do you remember what Jimmy Vassar's response was?
No.
He said, copy that, big boy. Let's go for it.
That's my boss.
Yeah, your restarts over the years, and that one was symbolic of really how good you were on restarts. I think it was the year you started last right on the field. Like, you passed five cars and you weren't even to the motel yet. I mean, and you might've gotten five more, but
they went yellow.
You had a caution. Yeah. Is that something else, that aggressiveness, that tenaciousness? Is that something else you'd like to be remembered for?
Yeah,
Is it just a factor of your restarts?
No, Kurt, to me, green means go, right? So it's time to go. It's not time to, I'm going to sit here for a second to see what's happening. No, it's go. I'm going. And I think I'm very well known for that. And I think I always will be. Now, you see, Rossi actually became mastered at that as well. And some of these guys over the years kind of actually made it as good. So now, all of a sudden, my moves don't work anymore, because everybody knows what move I'm going to make.
Yeah.
Right. So I talked to Felix and Pato at dinner in Thermal about the 500s. Like, we knew how good you were going to restart, so we ganged up on you. I mean, so it's it's backfiring on me right now. But yes, I mean, I'm pretty sure I will be well known for that too.
So you've got races in SRX still to come this year, and you've got the Indy 500 and
stock cars,
the Brazilian stock cars. Nothing past that. What would you like to do?
Actually,
you want to drive the two-seater? Because Elio wants to.
Two-seater, the pace car for next year. Maybe I can lead another lap. We'll add that to another 500. It'll be 16. No, we have big projects. I think I have a lot of ideas. Working really close with Aaron McLaren to help the team this year as they've grown. Maybe be involved in racing and work with, you know, some of the sponsors, having them have probably a better experience in the racetrack, you know, entertaining people. I still want to be going to races. As far as IndyCar races goes, racing, I don't think I will be, but my stock car deal, it's still up. I have another year there. And anything that has a wheel and a steering wheel, probably some people are going to invite me to do some other stuff.
One more thing about 2013. They said this on lap 9, that your car looked like it was good enough to win the race. And then Vince Welch kept saying during the pit stops throughout the race, you haven't touched a thing on the race car. Was it literally almost unchanged from the green flag?
Zero.
Checkered?
We didn't add a wing. I didn't change the bar. We just put fuel in tires the entire race, which I know is very unusual, but
that's unbelievable. I mean, it's,
I did not move one click on the front bar or the rear bar. We didn't add wing. We had fuel and tires for 7 or 8 stops, whatever that, many stops we had.
It's unbelievable. And a career that, I saw where you came from. I saw those little karting kids in San Paulo, and they're
yeah, you went.
I was there and saw that, saw how those kids just dream of just winning a kart race.
Yeah, but Kurt, you know what's funny or cool about that, right? You have two kids that fiercely race against each other.
A city kid and a farm kid.
Yeah, which is me and Elio, if you guys don't know who I'm talking about. I am the city kid, as you guys can tell.
Although he likes to portray it the other way around, but
he's not a city
kid. He's nuts. Like, yeah. Okay. So anyway.
And, you know, we looked at each other. This is a, we actually had that conversation. He was a farm kid and used to stay in my house, sleep in my house on the race weekends. And we one day we said to each other, says, hey, I know one of us is not going to make it to be a big boy. So we're going to make a promise here that if one of us make it, you hire the other one to carry your helmet and stuff. And fast forward 25 years later, the guy has 4 wins and I have 1. I would never had imagined that anyway.
Well, you would like 4, but you do, as you said in the 2013.
I would like 25.
Yeah, but you just want 1.
I have what I wanted it. Now, anything else that comes after, it's just a bonus.
It's been a bonus all the way around. Thanks for being a good sport about things along the way and a good friend of mine in the show. Let's keep racing, brother.
No, we'll be around. And I'll probably have more time to talk to you on the show. If you guys don't know this, we tried to schedule. He tried to schedule. And if you text me and I ignore him for a few weeks, so I apologize to the entire world. That's one of the promises I made, Kurt, that I didn't follow through. You want to talk about the other one?
No, you're going
to
win.
You know, Kurt used to work for this paper, and everybody was afraid of Kurt Cavin because, you know, he's a big boy. And I told him that I was going to make him famous, that when I won the 500, I was going to mention his name on the podium. And actually, I got caught up in the moment, and I forgot.
You're kissing your wife, and, you know.
I had important things to do.
I understand. It wasn't taken personally. All right, that's Tony Kanaan. Kevin Lee will be back in just a minute. This is Trackside.
Hi, this is David Malukas, and you're listening to Trackside.
Welcome back to Trackside, where, as you know, we like to hear from many of the players in the IndyCar series. And the newest one, driving the number 78 at Junco's Hollinger Racing, is someone I've kind of got a lot of early knowledge about, but I thought it was time to share it with the listeners. And I'm going to say it. I'm going to say Agustin Canapino.
Very
good. I want to hear you say it in Spanish. Let's hear you say it in Spanish.
Okay. So it sounds good. Anyway, in Spanish is Agustin Canapino.
And how are they saying it in America?
Agustin. Yes, normally Agustin. The people here in the shop tell me Agustin. And it's okay. It's the same.
And what about when you're, you know, running around Indianapolis, getting coffee or whatever? Are you?
I had that problem in the past because, for example, when I went to some shop like Starbucks, the people asked me your name. My name is Agustin. What? okay. Put my second name. My second name is Hugo. Hugo in Spanish. Hugo. Okay, Hugo. Okay.
you need Hugo on your car. That's what it needs to say. Just Hugo.
Yes, not bad idea, but in Argentina everybody know me with Agustin. So this is the thing.
So you've had what, 2 times in the race car now? You were at the Thermal Club and then you went to Sebring. Is that the two times in the race car?
Yes. And I had the first test in Sebring the last year. So I did 4 full days of test and for me, the whole test, all of these 4 tests, I could do without mistakes. I could do the full plan of the test. So I, of course, it's only the beginning, but I am improving test by test and lap by lap.
So,
and with my English too.
yeah. A couple weeks ago, you tested at the Thermal Club, and there were 27 cars. The 27 cars and drivers that we'll see in St. Pete here in a couple of weeks, and you were pretty consistently 20th, 21st, 22nd in the sessions. Were you surprised by that? Because you were faster. Your fastest lap was faster than a lot of drivers who have a lot of experience. Was that surprising to you?
Yes. Honestly, much better than I expected, honestly, because the other thing is thermal. It was a very, very demanding track, very long track with fastest corners. It was my first time in fastest corner with a high downforce car. And of course, with an Indy car. So it was an amazing experience for me. And honestly, it was much better than I expected. And of course, I think all of this did because the car was really good. The Juncos car was really good. The team is in a good moment. So Callum did really, really well. So I think this is the main thing to understand why I did relatively well in my first day. So I think I felt like, okay, it's not too bad, and maybe I can do relatively well. And all of the sacrifice for me, all of the change of life, and take this opportunity is not too crazy, I think. Of course, I don't lie. I expect in Saint Pete, I will be on the last position. It's the logical, it's the most probably to happen. But I think I will be maybe some close to the mid pack. I don't know, but I will try to that. And I have a more confidence now, and I keep working with my body, with my physical condition, with the team all the days, with the mechanics, trying to do my best to have a good weekend in Saint Pete. But good weekend for me is finish the race. In the last, doesn't matter. But for me, have a good weekend in Saint Pete is finish the race and keep gaining experience.
So Agustin Canapino joins us. So last week at Sebring, I think there were 9 or 10 cars. You were 9th or 10th, whatever last was. But I thought you were close on time. You were like 7/10 of a second. Was that good? Were you pleased with Sebring?
Yes, I think in Sebring I could do better, but I was focused on the race pace. I tried race pace. I tried something like water, something in the cool suit, something in the tire degradation. So honestly, I couldn't focus on the fastest lap. And I did 102 laps. So I focused on that, on the race pace, on the understanding the tire degradation, the pit stop. I trained a lot pit stop. So I think for me it's a good start position, much closer than I expected. But I repeat, honestly, it's IndyCar. So
yeah,
you can do well, you can do close to the mid pack, but you will be on the last position because IndyCar is very competitive. So I need to keep the calm, to keep my feet on the ground and growing step by step and take with patience, because the goal always is do the laps. And the goal inside pit is do the race, trying to do the race without mistakes and gaining experience.
So one of the things that you have to really work on is the communication between yourself and the crew and the team and so forth. And you've been working on your English. I know you've been taking classes or at least some kind of instruction. Did you find it difficult when you got in the car to communicate, or is that just natural as a race car driver?
Yes. I still have some problems, honestly. Much better than my first day. And of course, when I did the 24 hours on Daytona, I didn't speak any English. So I'm much better now, but I'm improving. I'm improving talking with the people, talking with the team. I understand much more now than 1 month ago when I come here to Indy. So yes, now it's a still a problem, less problem now than the beginning, but it's a still a problem. I need to, it's the same thing to about the driving. I need to practice, I need to do the races, I need to do this interview. I need to try and to practice with my language, and I'm improve in this condition too.
Hey, if you improve as much on your driving as you have on the communication, you're going to do really well, because just over the last month since we talked, you're even better than you were. So Agustin Canapino, or Hugo, as we might be calling him. What about like rules, when the rules of what you're supposed to do as a driver, was there something that surprised you? Like, I'm not supposed to do this, or I'm supposed to do this, that you didn't do in your driving in Argentina?
Yeah, big difference about the rules, of course. And this is the other thing I have to do when I will be inside pit. I have to have a meeting with the stewards. I have to do a meeting with them to learn, to ask to him and talk about the rules. IndyCar has a very, very intensive racing, much intensive than the other categories in the world. Here, the battles and the wheel by wheel is allowed a lot. So, and the cars goes really fast. So this is the other thing I have to learn, the wheel by wheel, the battles in the track, the contacts between the cars, because in the touring cars, you have to make much more contacts without damage your car than the open wheels. It's very, very different at the situation. So I need to learn that too. And I know some rules now, but I need to know more. And of course, I have to learn. I have to speak with the stewards, and I will do mistakes. I will do mistake, of course, and then learn about the mistakes around the season.
Well, just remember this, when you're talking to Max Pappas, you know, Max is a former driver. All you have to say is, Max, you were a crazy man driving, so it's okay. I'm going to learn. You were crazy.
It's a good thing. Some people told me that about the Max.
Max Pappas, good fun. So what about now living? You've been living now in Indianapolis, what, about 2 months? You've had...
No. I know... In 4 weeks, nothing. No,
4 weeks.
Less 4 weeks. Yes.
So it's colder. We've had a little bit of snow. Are you? What have you learned about being in America now, besides those two things?
Oh, it's a big difference here. In South America, the life is very, very different, especially the organization, the schedules, the food, the weather,
the driving,
the driving too. Yes. Here is much better, honestly. The only thing I miss a lot is my friends, is my family, is the weather, is the food.
But that's a lot.
Yes, no, but the life style, living here, I'm very happy. I'm living a big experience for me, because it's America, so it's a big country, and I was in South America, and the last country in South America, because Argentina is the southest country. I am very far to my home here, very, very far, so I am living an amazing experience. I don't know how long is, but because I don't know how long I will be there here, but I am living an amazing experience, and I'm very happy with this situation.
What about the food that you do like? What have you found?
Oh, in Argentina, especially in my town, the sticks
much are better.
Really, really, really good. I miss a lot the sticks. the barbecues in Argentina are really good. But here the food is good, but only it's different. I need to adapt and find some place to eat good food, because I need to eat good food, organic food. And it's not too easy to find here organic food. But I'm learning and I enjoy everything here. All I miss a little bit the steaks and the barbecue with my friends in Argentina.
And your girlfriend's happy in Indianapolis?
Yes, yes. She's now in Argentina.
Oh, she went home because she didn't like the snow.
Yeah, now but back. She will be back the next week. I miss her now. But yeah, she's happy. It's the same situation. We are living an amazing experience. Very different experience than I expected. Never. When we come to America, normally we come to holidays, Miami, something like this, Disney, but never live in America with American people. And Indianapolis is a very American place. So we are living an amazing experience, and we are really, really happy with this.
Well, it's going to be good. Now, you know, St. Pete going to have close walls. Have you done a lot of street racing?
Yes, in Argentina, we did a lot of street racing. But honestly, it's not the same. So with touring cars, everything comes much slower.
Yeah.
And you are sit much high in the car, so you look much more. So I did a lot of races in Argentina in street courses. I had good results always in street courses, but it's not the same. And I think the big difference between me and the others, the rookies too, is I don't know the circuits. I don't know the tracks, and everybody except Armstrong, but Armstrong did a lot of years in Formula 2 and open wheel car. So I am a really disadvantage with everybody, honestly.
Yeah.
But this is the challenge I like. I like it, honestly. I like this challenge. It's very, I am the driver with a lot more disadvantage, or whatever the word mean. But of course I am worried about that, but at the same time I am excited about that.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people pulling for you. I know there were some comments made at the open test. One person joked that your English is already better than Elio's. Castro Neves has been here 22 years. And I think about Valentino Rossi. Valentino's been racing across the world for 25 years. He still can't get English right. So you've come a long way in 4 weeks. So
thank you.
All right. It's Agustin Canapino, driver of the number 78 Juncos Hollinger racing car, with some really green and bright colors, so your car will be easy to spot. The new logo is terrific. I know you've got it on your sweatshirt. The listeners can't see it, but it looks really good. And hey, best of luck this season.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the interview, and we'll see you in St. Pete.
Agustin, I think that's right, from listening to Kurt and Agustin Canapino on the program tonight. New driver for Juncos Hollinger Racing, who has been, I think, all things considered, very impressive with his limited IndyCar experience and testing so far. So can't wait to see him on track coming up in, 9 days before practice will get started for the Grand Prix of St. Pete. That's it. We're out of time tonight, and we'll crunch it all into an hour next week. So we're on from 8 until 9 because of other programming commitments. So 8 until 9 next Tuesday night. And then we will be racing. Thanks to Tony Kanaan for joining the program tonight. For Eddie Garrison, Kurt Cavan, I'm Kevin Lee. Thanks for joining us, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.